afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Monday, August 10th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy Monday, Melody.
Happy Monday to you. What a Monday it's been. We've just been swamped today, and it just gets crazier and crazier out there in today's financial world, in which we're going to talk about today in many various forms. And we have gold today. We're looking at, had some pressure this morning, had a low of 2018, but a high of 2051. So we'll take 2026 right now, down $9.50. Silver's up 68 cents today at 29.11, a great day for silver, up almost 2.5%. Platinum was up 21 at 991. Palladium was up 73 at 2,274. The USDX today was trading up 0.19 at 93.60. Crude oil was up 0.76 at 41.98. The paper markets today, paper markets don't care what's going on at anywhere at any time. We have the Dow was up 359 points at 27,791. We have the NASDAQ down 42 points at 10,968. The S&P was up 9 at 3,360. The 10-year yield is 0.57%. And let's see, foreign and Asia markets were pretty hardly moved at all. So it was a pretty interesting day with gold. Everybody's taking advantage. And of course, what I believe had a big impact on people's buying decisions for gold and silver had a lot to do with the weekend executive order coming out of the White House. And there was four of them on Saturday, including a temporary payroll tax deferral for some workers and continued expanded unemployment benefits. Now, you know, I'm not going to go into, you know, what it was, how it was criticized and so forth and whatnot. But I think the most, I'm not really sure it's really defunding Social Security and Medicare. I mean, certainly, it's because supposedly some of this is going to be paid back. So, I'm not even sure if they're going to be able to go through with it. But the actions took the U.S. Treasury, authorizes the U.S. Treasury to allow companies to defer, not to suspend, payroll taxes for Americans making less than $100,000 a year from September 1 through December 31st. So I believe that's where your Social Security and so forth comes from. So, you know, he said that if he was reelected, he could extend the deferral and terminate the tax for some workers. The president said another move would provide $400 a week in jobless benefits, down from $600. States would be responsible for covering 25% of that cost. So it just goes on and just goes on and it just goes on, Dave.
Yeah, it's true. The administration's directing states to use part of the $150 billion coronavirus relief fund, while the federal government will tap on $44 billion of the existing $70 billion disaster relief fund. That latter fund, as many listeners may know, typically is used for reimbursements to states as a result of hurricanes, tornadoes, and other usually natural disasters.
And you know what, Dave? I don't know if that's where the federal flood insurance. I know FEMA is in charge of that, and the funds come from FEMA for the federal flood insurance. I don't know if it's in that disaster relief fund. If that's the case, that's a big deal, because you have a lot of people who carry flood insurance. We went through this last year. We weren't sure it was going to be funded. It's very hard to find flood insurance anywhere else. None of the property carriers will cover it. And if you do find it, it does cost you an arm and a leg. So, you know, that's, you know, and so I didn't mean to interrupt, but I thought that was important to know if that did come out of the disaster relief fund as you were talking about it.
No, I believe it does. Yeah. So I would agree with you. That's a pretty significant, particularly we're now at the beginning of this year's hurricane season. Now, according to a Bloomberg News analyst, because the administration plan taps a limited pool of existing funds to extend unemployment benefits at $400 per week, that's assuming states kick in $100 of that, there's a high risk that they run short by the end of the year. Now, to act on his own, the president's relying on what some people are saying is an expansive and certainly controversial reading of executive power that Washingtonians believe will face legal challenges unless Mnuchin's and Mark Meadows' negotiations with Schumer and Pelosi come to fruition. Of the $3.7 trillion Congress has already authorized for the pandemic response, there's still $1.5 trillion of that yet to be spent or committed. That's according to the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. The White House, though, has limited authority to redirect the unused money without Congress's approval. And because the president can't cut taxes on his own, since that's a function that has to initiate with the House of Representatives, the president's simply delaying the due date for the payroll tax, which, as most listeners know, is paid in equal amounts by employers and employees. Melody.
Well, I heard discussions today that people weren't sure that the employees, I don't know if this is an executive order, I would think employers would have to comply.
Well, it all depends on the language, and some are suggesting that the language allows employers not to do this. So I haven't seen the language of the executive order, so I can't offer you my own humble, independent opinion. But according to some news outlets, there's some question about that.
Hmm. So my question is, what's the point? You know, and that's what's so bad about these. I wasn't a fan of any executive order prior to this administration. You know, and I'm not a fan from this administration either. Our country shouldn't be ruled by executive orders, but they've totally gotten out of hand, and they're executed on the whims. And I mean, that's the problem with DACA. You know, it shouldn't have been done, but they went ahead and did it, and all by executive orders. And it's everybody just looks beyond. I mean, if it helps your group, everybody cheers for it. And this is where we're at.
As we now know, the executive action of one administration can easily be undone by a subsequent one, and redone or further undone by one after that. It's not a good way to do the business of the American people, Melody. I agree.
No, not at all. And I don't know one executive order that actually was really good. Because, you know, if it was really good, you wouldn't have to do it an executive, order. You know, that's a different topic. And, you know, so we'll just have to see how this plays out, and we'll see if, the stimulus, will eventually look like. And if this will bring them to the table and whatever. The point is, there's going to be another stimulus. And we just don't know how big yet. And it's not a matter of how little, just because they're coming down from $3.5 trillion, from what the Democrats wanted to the one. It's how big is it going to be? $1 trillion is big. $1.5 trillion is big. $2 trillion is big. So, it's... What else did he do in his, he had one for eviction, I believe.
Well, yeah, this is part of the this it's called a memorandum, but it supposedly expands the congressionally approved eviction moratorium that expired at the end of July. Now, in that memorandum, Trump directs the House director, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, that's the one headed by Ben Carson, to extend protection for renters in federally backed housing. That mirrors the previous stimulus legislation, the CARES Act, that shielded around a third of the nation's renters. About one in five American renters, that's 19 to 23 million people, are at risk of eviction by the end of September. That's according to the Aspen Institute. And a separate memo also waives all interest on federal student loans through the end of this year and also allows borrowers to delay payments, I believe. I believe that that's for the same period to the end of 2020.
What happens? You these evictions. It's been so long now. The people who have the rental properties aren't getting an income either. So if they're in a position to soon file, I mean, you'd think they'd have to be hurting. So, if they have to file evictions, that means there's going to be another turnaround before they get any money. What if they file bankruptcy before the people are evicted? Who do the people get to stay? I mean,
Yeah, that would
is that just a
that's a
far
good
out?
no, it's a plausible scenario. I don't know the answer to it. I mean, typically, I mean, these eviction laws are state based, and I don't know how specific or far reaching the moratorium, the federal imposed moratorium is. But you know, clearly it's a possibility. Now, another question, and I haven't seen this, is how many of these landlords and landladies are participants in the mortgage forbearance program. You know, I think part of the assumption was that, you know, as rents were essentially held in forbearance during this period, that in turn the owners of those properties, you know, the mortgages that they owe and weren't getting money for from their tenants, could be or would be held in forbearance under that part of the CARES Act. I haven't seen statistics on that. I would imagine that there's a I don't know if significant is the right word, but I wouldn't be surprised if it were a decent percentage, a majority of those tenants. But maybe not. You know, that's just something I wish there were more readily available information on. We'll take a look at that maybe for Wednesday's program, just to mention for listeners, Melody.
The next we have is about the Fed. And I'm not sure. I don't know if I would go along with this, Dave, that the Federal Reserve is undergoing an overhaul. We know that they're supposed to, I mean, they were created, long time ago, over 100 years ago. And we get the history of the Federal Reserve, and we know what they're supposed to do, but what they've really done is just destroyed our value of our currency. So, I mean, they're supposed to keep inflation in check and oversee the country's money supply, but now they're driving the economy. Now they're fueling, keeping doing everything possible just to keep the stock market going and to keep the finance. Well, and that is a big part of keeping the monetary system going too. It's not a matter of inflation anymore. It's not a matter of, I don't know, the country's money supply anymore. So it's, you know, they're saying that the Fed, by essence of what it's doing, has taken control of the markets. I mean, we've been saying that for probably the last, I mean, ever since they created, government created the Plunge Protection Team back in 1987, 88. They've taken control of the markets, government and the Federal Reserve. So this isn't new, though. But is it different this time? I mean, or how much deeper have they actually lost control?
Seems like they have. I mean, in some respects, I would argue they have more control. That it isn't different, as you said. It's just more. And a lot more. I mean, you see the money supply, you know, increased $4 trillion over a short period of time. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Although, you know, indications of rising inflation, at least how the government reports it, you know, it's hard to find significant increases. I mean, we know that, you know, food, and the oh-so-volatile energy components of CPI and PCE have been rising. It just takes one or two trips to the grocery store to know that. But to unwrap more of it is pretty gosh darn difficult during this pandemic, especially because, again, so much of the numbers are based on surveys of consumers, surveys of households, surveys of businesses. But I agree with you. I do believe that this is not such a far cry from their actions as they were 25 or so years ago. I just think it's gone to the next level. And they're big numbers, ladies and gentlemen.
And I hear the music. We're heading into a break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And, of course, you can listen to these programs archived on a daily basis. And, of course, you can listen live. You just go to the bar at the top of the page, and it's only active at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So if you try to click on the bar at any other time, you won't get anything, but 4 o'clock Eastern time. 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. You know, I don't know if we have anything on Amazon today. Did you see that, where they are looking to perhaps take over the empty mall space?
Yes.
Are we going to talk about that?
We do mention it.
Wow. I mean, it's really scary when you have a company like that to just... I mean, he would definitely buy the post office. I mean, why wouldn't he?
If they
allowed it to go through... I mean, you know, if the... I don't know. I don't know if they... Do you think they would sell it to a private?
No.
You don't think they'll do that?
No, I don't. Let's put it this way. It's all about the art of the vote, and I just don't think the votes would be there. certainly not in the House. And I doubt in the Senate as well. I think these senators, in particularly rural parts of the country, less populated, and it's largely a political decision. I mean, if it were an economic or financial decision, the outcome could be different. And perhaps at some point, some people would probably consider it, blasphemous, outrageous, that an institution as old as the Postal Service, would no longer be a government-run entity. But, with the large amounts of deficits, particularly if they're not going to change the way they require... pension fund to be funded.
But why do they put such stress on the post office then? Because they know that, I mean, it's the only entity around that's required. So it's like they put something on it so they would fail.
Well, because Congress has always come through with funding to keep it going. And I think
to put that demand on any company would fail.
Not disagreeing with you.
So, I mean, why? I mean, 50 years is absurd. You know? So.
Yeah, it's as a business decision, boy, it's got to be unique. If not unique, then certainly among... very small percentage of defined benefit pension plans, public or private, that are still in existence, requires that kind of long-term funding.
Yeah, well, You know, hey, I wonder what the even the government's pension plan, they don't have to pay 50 years in advance. Do they?
Oh, no.
Yeah. So why the so it's designed to fail.
No, it's designed. It's an annual appropriation.
You know, plus, you know, with things that are changing, I mean, you know, they don't do the mailing like they have and so forth, so nothing was adjusted to fix it. Anyway, we can debate this and talk about that, but it is kind of interesting, and you kind of wonder where it's going to go. I mean, just like everything else, if it continues to fail to the billions of dollars that they are, to lose money to the, it's going to fail. Just, it's no different than our Social Security. It's going to fail. There's no money there. So if there's no money there, they're going to have to do something, you know.
Well, I'll tell you, it is ironic. I mean, in terms of Amazon saying they're going to look to lease the space being given up by JCPenney and Sears in malls across the country to use as fulfillment centers to make it to make delivery of Amazon orders quicker. I just I have to laugh at the irony of it. Here you have Amazon, which is probably more responsible for the retail apocalypse as much as, if not more, than any other factor. And here it could end up being the savior of the U.S. mall. go figure.
Would they continue to have stores in there, or would they just take them over?
No, I think how I read it is that they would take them over. That... these would be limited, I guess, to the stores that Sears and Penney's have closed or are closing, will close. And I don't know if, that tells me that they could take it a step further and actually start negotiating with those companies, possibly other big anchors who leave the malls as well. It's amazing. The reach of some of these companies today, multinationals. Anyway.
Oh, I remember when everybody was upset about AT&T.
I always remember. I was a kid having dinner. My sister and I had weekly dinners at our great Uncle Al and Aunt Anna's. And they would always tell us about their Bell telephone stock that they had inherited from a parent or grandparent or whomever. And I think my Aunt Anna was still alive when Ma Bell was broken up. But we used to say, my mom used to say, oh, my God, if Uncle Al were alive today, he wouldn't have been able to handle it. They were true monopolists. Paper investors to boot, I'm afraid.
Yes. Well, you know, I guess what's going on with this trade phase one deal? I mean,
time will tell.
These back and forth negotiations are just
much ado about nothing, or is you know, you got Trump saying he doesn't care about it anymore, and you got Lighthizer and Mnuchin, who seem to be much more engaged about it. And
Pompeo is ready to go to war with them.
I know. It's really, there are a lot of different dynamics at play, and it'll be interesting to see. If in fact a true review, it'll be because I guess the review is bilateral. I mean, they both parties require themselves and each other as part of the agreement to review this after 6 months, I guess. And so I just find that the dynamics of just the geopolitical tenor is going to make this really interesting, especially, you know, we with, of course,
Conalush, are you still there?
I am.
Okay. Well, you know, with that, before we talk about the jobs report, you know, China said it's going to sanction 11 Americans in retaliation for similar measures that was imposed by the U.S. just on Friday. But so far, the list doesn't include any members of the Trump administration. Those sanctioned, it's kind of funny, those sanctioned include Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, Tom Cotton, Pat Toomey, Congressman Chris Smith, Human Rights Watch Executive Director Kenneth Roth, National Endowment for Democracy President Carl Gershman, and Michael Abramowitz. See, anyway, he's the president of Freedom House. And and this is in response to the U.S. wrong behaviors. China's decided to impose sanctions on those individuals who behave badly on Hong Kong-related issues. He didn't specify what the sanctions would entail. And China last month announced separate sanctions against U.S. officials, including Rubio and Cruz, and in what was seen as mostly symbolic attempt to retaliate over America's step to punish Beijing for its treatment of ethnic minorities in Xinjiang. Interesting people. You wonder why they chose those, the Rubio and Cruz, and, you know, it's maybe not part of the administration, but it's part of the senators that seem to be very close to Trump, Dave.
Yeah, and they're the ones who've been most vocal in the Senate, mm-hmm. anyway, you know, against some of China's actions in involving Hong Kong. It's and I suppose there's a more strategic reason for having chosen them, although I really haven't thought it through at this point. I mean, we can see some of that same strategic like thinking with these threatened U.S. tariffs on some European goods. You know, who in turn have, you know, talked about the tariffs on whiskey, you know, which would affect Mitch McConnell, who's in a tight race for re-election, and other states as well, where there are incumbents in tight re-election races. So are there friends anywhere left in the world, Melody?
I don't know if there's anybody I want to be friends with that rests in the left in the world.
Good God.
But you know what? And just to bring this up, at this point in time, Hong Kong authorities had brought in their enforcement of a new national security law today, arresting media tycoon Jimmy Lai, searching the headquarters of his next digital group and carting away boxes of what they said was evidence. They've also arrested a prominent pro-democracy activist, Agnes Chow Ting, at her home 2 days after Chinese and Hong Kong officials shrugged off sanctions imposed on them by the U.S. The moves show China's determination to enforce the new law and curb dissent. And so this is the first time the law was used against news media with Lau's arrest and the search of his next digital group. And, of course, that stokes some fears that authorities are suppressing press freedom. That just cracks me up. I mean, this is China. The press doesn't have any freedom anyway. So to suppress it is kind of interesting. I shared this story before with I have a client in Hawaii, married a Chinese, had a Chinese bride, and they traveled to China many times. And he calls me from China to talk and so forth. And, you know, he'll say, well, what's going on? I says, well, don't you read the news? I'll bring up something. And he says, well, no. You know, for what we get in America, like today, China won't know about it, he says, for at least 2 or 3 weeks. So, and then, of course, much of that is scrubbed, too, you know, or cleaned up or however, you know, they want it. So, you know, to think that there is, you know, that they're actually suppressing press freedoms is kind of, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's to some it's really a worrisome sign that things are going to get a lot worse in Hong Kong. Now, if you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with these arrested folks. How long will they be held? How will they be treated? Is it just going to be a short weekend, week stay? Is it going to be for an extended period of time until they agree to some statement that the Chinese they themselves write? Or is this just largely symbolic to try and make people in Hong Kong and perhaps the U.S. in particular think? Sometimes the perception of fear is as bad as fear itself.
Well, let's see, what else do we have? There's so many things, and I just want to let the listeners know, Dave, if it's possible, if you care to accept this challenge.
Always.
Would you like to allow me to escape the last segment of the program today?
Oh, my gosh.
Just so that we can, so I didn't want the listeners to think that I would just keep disappearing in these last segments.
Well, I know the phones have been ringing off the hook, and you do what you need to do, and I'll certainly be happy to carry us into the end of the program.
All righty. And 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Product is still flowing, but it's still a little hard. We have 1 ounce American Silver Eagles, boxes of 500. I expect they'll dry up anytime soon. Premiums keep rising from the wholesalers. But you're looking at a 30 to 45 day wait on those.
Wow, really?
Yes. So, and that's for us. So if they get shipped to you, if they have to come to us first, if, you know, for the smaller orders, you know, it might be a little bit longer till you actually get the package. But if you're ordering boxes of 500, they'll go out, you know, and as soon as your funds get in and cleared. So it's always good to bank wire when you're ordering boxes of Silver Eagles, because we get you in line. So, you know, if we have to wait for your check to clear and everything like that, that's just extra days. So we get you in line at the depository, so your product gets shipped. So that's the best thing and the way to help you to get your product quicker. But expect 30, 45 days. Any more than that, I don't. I'm not going to sell Silver Eagles any longer than that. There's other products available. We have Silver Kangaroos. We have Silver Philharmonics. They're beautiful coins. And we got Silver Krugerrands, and we've got a break that we're heading into. So 1-800-375-4188. Take care of my last 20 minutes, Dave.
I'll do my best.
And Dave will be right back.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hey, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, filling in solo for Melody in this third and final segment of the day while she attends to some business in the office. Again, we're at 1-800-375-4188. Our weekly newsletter will be out after today's program. You can sign up for our free weekly American Survival newsletter and our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blogs at dgscoins.com. Look for the subscribe mailbox and give us your email. You'll get our twice a week at least communications. Now, today we talk about last Friday's July jobs report. That's our article showing we're not out of the woods just yet. On the one hand, jobs growth in July was almost 20% higher than the consensus guesses of mainstream economists, and the third best on record. On the other hand, after record-setting growth in May and June, payroll slowed significantly in July. It declined by almost one-half compared to the average growth over the previous 2 months, certainly putting a damper and question marks on the struggling American economy. Now, as we know, the Labor Department reported on Friday that non-farm payrolls increased by nearly 1.8 million for the month, causing the headline U3 unemployment rate to fall to 10.2% from 11.1%. Economists expected growth of 1.48 million jobs and an unemployment rate of 10.6%. Now, a much more accurate and complete measure, which includes discouraged workers and underemployed holding part-time jobs, the so-called U6 government rate, that stood at 16.5%, down from 18% in June. Our friends at ShadowStats.com, run by John Williams, believes the unemployment rate is actually closer to 30% when applying methodologies of old. But I'll tell you, even if we get to the point where the government talking heads and the media pundits in both print and television start using this U6 rate, I think we're getting to a better place, a more transparent and more, frankly, a more accurate and honest portrayal of our jobless situation, particularly since the Fed's one of its two primarily objectives is seeking full employment. And full employment, you know, some say it's 4%, others say it's 5%, whatever it is, 16.5% is a far cry from 10.2%. And it should be the number that is used as the basis for Fed action. In any event, we know there's a lot of uncertainty, again, in the reported numbers. Indeed, there were wide variations around the estimates as the pandemic's persistence dented plans to get our lackadaisical economy completely back online. For example, as we talked about, the report last Wednesday from ADP and Moody's Analytics showed a gain of just 167,000 in private payrolls, of course, fueling economist and investor pessimism. And what's more, some of the government's numbers themselves continue to be somewhat dubious. The Labor Department's July figures show that government at all levels added 301,000 jobs last month, a surprisingly strong performance. But those gains were exaggerated by a technicality, namely that many school districts across the country had laid off teachers and other workers in the spring because of the shutdowns instead of in the summer, as they usually do. That change disrupted the Labor Department's seasonal adjustments and had the effect of probably vastly overstating its government workers count in July. Now, economists have been urging Congress to deliver massive state aid, federal aid to state and local governments. And with few exceptions, the states and municipal governments have experienced an unprecedented loss of tax revenue from the recession and are prevented by their balanced budget requirements from stimulating their economies with increased spending. But Congress has yet to agree on providing any further help to state and local governments and to avoid huge layoffs, which seem more and more inevitable as the weeks go by. Now, May and June had a combined increase of more than 7.5 million jobs added. That's the fastest two-month rise in U.S. history. The reasons for those big gains, though? Mainly the return of furloughed workers who were either laid off earlier in the year as the nation sought to reduce the effects of the pandemic. And even with a three-month gain of 9.3 million workers, either newly hired or back to their old jobs, the total employment level remained 13 million below its February pre-pandemic level. The total unemployment level is now at 16.3 million Americans. That's a decline of more than 1.4 million, according to the Fed's most recent survey of households. That compares with a peak of nearly 23 plus million in April. All told, the U.S. has recovered just 42% of the jobs that were lost in March and April. Now, the recent hiring gains haven't managed to draw many more Americans into the job market. The labor force, which includes people who've either have a job or are looking for one, shrank last month by 62,000. That was a slight decrease as a percentage of the adult population from 61.5% to 61.4%. Lydia Bosour of Oxford Economics, she's a senior economist there, she said, "With coronavirus cases surging and the economic recovery faltering, discouraged and fearful workers were likely more reluctant to rejoin the official ranks of those seeking work. What portion of the unemployed were motivated to stay at home as a result of the $600 weekly pandemic unemployment benefits is unknown, but clearly a factor as well. But here's the bottom line, ladies and gentlemen. July's job growth is significantly lower than May's and June's, suggesting that the pace of any recovery is slowing, if even existent. July's good news, then, there weren't net job losses. The bad news, August and September reports are just around the corner." So again, be on the lookout for our newsletter. Also include an insightful piece by our good friend Wendy Wilson at Apothecary Herbs, as well as Melody's weekly market report. Now, bear with me. Let me span through what else we have here what makes sense. We know Indonesia has speeded up its distribution of $50 billion in stimulus. The Turkish lira has sunk to a record low, a new record low. Puerto Rico has suspended primary voting because of a lack of ballots. But let's go back to some more domestic news. A new survey from Civic Science shows that higher income Americans are returning to dining and delivery takeout at a higher rate than their less wealthy peers. As we know, wealthy Americans have a greater share of overall U.S. income than ever before, and increased spending could be a boon to the restaurant and fast food sectors, particularly now. The richest one quarter of Americans cut their consumer spending more than any other income group during the pandemic. That's according to a study of a team of Harvard University researchers. And while spending has rebounded over the last 3 months, that's been much truer for lower income households. Spending among high income households remains considerably lower than pre-pandemic levels and appears connected to perceived pandemic health worries. Wealthier people, and this is I found interesting, tend to eat the most fast food, according to a recent study from the CDC that found the percentage of adults who consume fast food increases with family income. Sort of counterintuitive. 32% roughly of adults in households at least 130% of the federal poverty level, which happens to be about $31,600 for a family of four. So 130% or less of the federal poverty level report eating fast food on any given day, roughly a third. Over 36% of Americans making 130 to 350% of the federal poverty level eat fast food on any given day, and 42% of those making more than 350% of the federal poverty level eat fast food. Begs the question, I wonder how Americans' average weight has fared during the pandemic. If nothing else, that's food for thought as we move ahead to more uncertain times. Here's an interesting eye-opener. Economist Mohammed L. Orion, who's a Wall Streeter, said today that he considers a wave of corporate bankruptcies as the biggest threat to the stock market's rally from its pandemic era lows in March. Chief Economic Advisor at Alliance said, I think what derails this market isn't more China-U.S. tension, isn't more political differences. It's if we get large-scale bankruptcies as a result. He said that is what derails this market. L. Orion's comments come as Democrat leaders and Trump administration negotiators have been able to strike a deal on a broad relief package, Stimulus 4.0. And that, as we discussed earlier, prompted the president to issue a series of executive actions over the weekend. Tensions between the U.S. and China have been rising, particularly regarding Beijing's sweeping national security law in Hong Kong and Trump's recent executive orders involving the Chinese-owned social media app TikTok and Tencent's popular messaging app WeChat. Stocks so far have continued to show strength, relatively speaking, despite the backdrop of geopolitical flare-ups and Washington back and forth. Earlier today, the Dow Jones was up more than 250 points, building off its nearly 4% gain last week. Now, L. Orion, who's a former co-CEO of investment house PIMCO, contends that the market's rally in recent weeks has really been about technical factors. He says that's allowed for equities to continue moving higher, even in spite of the pandemic and numerous other headwinds, which Melody and I have talked about, I'm sure, almost ad nauseum. L. Orion correctly predicted the pandemic itself would continue until a bear market was reached, but has been cautious about a recovery. He said he worries about the structurally embedded economic damage that significant bankruptcies could usher in. He warns bankruptcies go from short-term liquidity problems to long-term solvency problems. If you get that, then unemployment becomes more problematic and you get capital impairment. He added, believe me, if there's one thing Federal Reserve money can't help markets through, it's capital impairment events. He added that a plateauing in the U.S. economic recovery from worst of the pandemic carnage would still leave bankruptcies on the table. We need growth to pick up again, he added. We need to get back to this notion of a V-shaped recovery as opposed to a square root where we come up and then level off. Well, good luck with that, sir. I believe the die has been cast. Going to take a long time to see how and just where things pan out. Now, we talked about Amazon looking to use Penny and Sears. We have just a couple of seconds left until we hear that music, which means we will not talk about the next topic of interest. We'll save that for Wednesday's program. For now, that's all we have for today's Financial Survival. Thanks a lot for listening. I'm Dave Allen. I'll be back on Wednesday along with Wendy Wilson. Melody will be back tomorrow with the Reverend Butch Paul. Until then, have a great evening and stay safe out there. Bye-bye.
If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball.
Broadcasting to the U.S. and around the world by way of Clear Digital Audio, 22,500 miles above the planet, this is the Global Star Radio Network.